Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio. And a warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. Thank you for joining me today. It is in Minneapolis-St. Paul area, the first day. The temperature has gone over 60 degrees in 5 months, so you can only imagine the joy that's happening around here. We're having a great day. I hope you're having a good day, and I hope your day so far has been wonderful, and I'm so glad that you've are able to spend some time with me this afternoon. We've got Dr. Glenn Pickering in studio. So I'm excited about that. That's going to be in our first hour. And Glenn's so smart, he can explain to you why your dog is afraid of the vacuum cleaner. But we're probably not going to spend time doing that. We are going to work on other things. We're going to learn some of the basics of good relationships. We're going to talk about listening today. And we're also going to get the day started with talking about heartbreak and sometimes how heartbreak can last for a long time and how maybe you can avoid heartbreak if you learn to start listening better. So that's what we're going to focus on in the first hour. If you want to call with a question, please get ready to do so. That number is 877-933-2484. You can call. You can also text. That number is the same for a text, 877-933-2484. And that's all ahead in hour one, which I am looking forward to. Every time Glenn's in the studio, I learn lots, and I think listeners do too. So I'm looking forward to once again getting access to his brain power, which is big. His website is Glenn Pickering. That's two N's, GlennPickering.com. Glenn is generous enough to offer on his website a 20-minute consultation for free, which means you can get on the phone with him and consult. And that's, I have to tell you, you can learn a lot in 20 minutes with him because he's the art of condensing things. He does such a nice job of hearing, understanding, and condensing right down to a simple point. So we're gonna start with Glenn here in just a minute. We're going to take a little break, and in 60 seconds, we're back.
I'm Dr. Alan Kierden, president of the University of Northwestern and Northwestern Media. 70 years ago, the media division began with the launch of KTIS AM in Minneapolis, our first radio station. Since that time, the Faith Radio Network has grown with AM and FM signals in 9 markets across the Upper Midwest and in Hartford, Connecticut, plus listeners connecting with us online and on the Faith Radio app from around the country and across the globe. This is a testament to God's faithfulness to this ministry and the prayer and generosity of thousands of listeners across the decades who stand with us to keep the teaching and the talk programming available so that the gospel message can go out and God's word can be proclaimed. Relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching has continued uninterrupted for 7 decades, thanks to you. So join me in celebrating 70 years of ministry for Faith Radio. Thank you.
We decided that is going to be Dr. Glenn Pickering's music, his intro music, his own personal music. He is a scientist and a teacher. There's really nothing very ordinary about Glenn. He is an electrical engineer, and he decided he'd go back to school. But no one thought he was referring to seminary. And then once he became a pastor, he decided that he would earn his PhD in psychology. So that's who I have in studio with me today. Glenn, welcome back to the show.
It is always fun to be here.
Thank you. And I also just want to say a big hello to Stacy, who's listening. And, you know, it's always fun just to meet new people and have new people come into the listening family here at Faith Radio. So it's always fun.
Thanks.
Yep.
That's good.
So let's talk about heartbreak. You know, I've heard people, they suffer with heartbreak, and it's real, isn't it? Okay. I mean, the physiological damage that comes from heartbreak,
right,
where people sometimes their health just goes down the drain.
It's important to understand, I think, that there's literally nothing in our life as important to us as our relationships. So if one of those breaks down or ends in a way that's especially painful, the pain of that is deeper than any other sort of pain because there literally isn't anything in our life that's more important to mm-hmm. us. So the pain of having that not work is particularly deep. Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely.
So if you have had your heart broken, is there a standard amount of time that people will spend being in a state of heartbrokenness?
Yeah, I think 5 minutes, maybe something like that.
No, come on, Glenn, be more real.
I think I want to talk about grief just for a second, okay?
Yeah.
I think we go through grief in a godly sort of way. There are kind of two steps to it. There's a first part where we just come to terms with a sadness, like, wow, that person, that relationship, that house, that job, that city we lived in, that's just done. Not kind of done, not sort of done, not like, oh, but maybe they'll come back sometime. No, it's done. And it takes us a while to just really get to our arms around the sadness of, wow, that's done. That's kind of the first step. And the second step that happens, as soon as we even begin to get our arms around, man, that's really done, then our spirit starts working on the question, okay, well then, now what?
Mm-hmm.
So I promise you, if you're feeling like, hey, I'm kind of stuck at that heartbreak place, I'm having a hard time getting past it, I would gently suggest to you that there were one or two things that might be going wrong. You're either not really, really letting yourself come to terms with the sadness of that's over. So maybe you keep blaming them or arguing with them or thinking how you should really be back together or it was so unjust or so wrong. All those things we do to not just come to terms with, wow, that's done.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to just let our mind and our heart come to terms with that's done, even though it's painful. Because otherwise the part that's supposed to happen next where we start thinking, okay, what were the lessons there? What did I learn? How can I move on from here? What's kind of next for me?
Mm-hmm.
Never gets a chance to kick in. So it's important to let yourself go through both of those phases where you actually come to terms with the loss. But it's also important not to feel like somehow you're being disloyal when your spirit then starts to kick in and think, okay, what's next? Because I promise you, that's what's supposed to happen.
Okay. But what if you just got your heart broken because someone left you and all of a sudden you realize the reality of your life and you're heartbroken?
Right. And I think you probably are.
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't want a person to feel heartbroken or to grieve when they're sad. I think grieving is important. I just don't want them to get stuck there. So mm-hmm. if somebody said, Glenn, I've been grieving for a little while about my relationship, I think, oh, good, I'm glad you let yourself be sad.
Mm-hmm.
But until we let ourselves be sad, we never actually get ready to move into the next stage where we start thinking about what comes next.
Mm-hmm.
But if they tell me, Glenn, it's been 2 or 3 years and I'm still just as stuck, I'm just as sad, then I'm going to think, okay, that has gone from being a really natural and good grief reaction to being a place where you're kind of stuck there. And that's when I'm going to ask people if there's anything they're doing that's keeping them from actually just being, just letting themselves be sad and think, wow, that's really done.
Mm-hmm. Glenn, I've heard people talk about fear of abandonment in mm-hmm. relationships. And I struggle with that a little bit because
sure.
can adults abandon other adults? Or do adults just make choices and leave?
Well,
are they abandoned?
Here's the tricky thing. And this happens for all of us in various forms. So let's say when I was a kid, my parents did sort of abandon me or didn't pay a lot of attention to me.
You were a kid.
Yes, I was a kid.
That's different.
And I had that old feeling. Now, if somebody now in my adult life leaves me that I was pretty attached to, it's going to trigger that old experience. And so I'm going to feel like, oh, you're abandoning me.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm actually doing is sort of re-experiencing the experience I had when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
But that's true of all of us. If we have a feeling about something that seems too big, I promise you it's because we're reacting to the past and the present. So, for example, when I was growing up, you know me, I was autistic. And nobody paid attention to me. So I really walked around feeling like I didn't matter. Really didn't matter if I was here or not. Okay. So now if somebody can accidentally ignore me or just forget about me for a second in just the littlest way, and I get triggered really hard, like I don't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not what actually just happened. Probably what actually just happened is somebody just forgot to call me. But it triggers that really old feeling I have about that I don't really matter. So we can have things that happen in the present that trigger that really old stuff for us. And almost all the times we have a really big reaction, it seems sort of out of proportion to what's happening, is because it's triggering a really old experience for us.
Mm-hmm. those motions must be deeply embedded.
Yes, absolutely.
In the Paleolithic range of a person's
I think that's really true.
Bones, because that stuff sticks around forever, doesn't it?
Well, partly it sticks around because usually we have those thoughts because they happened over and over again.
Okay.
So I didn't develop that feeling when I was a kid of being unimportant because one time somebody didn't pay attention to me.
Right.
I developed that feeling because over and over and over and over again, day after day after day for years, people mostly just didn't interact with me. So I literally had that thought go through my head probably 10,000 times that I don't actually matter. It doesn't matter if I'm here or not. So, yeah, that brain pathway is pretty deeply grooved because I had that experience so many times.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Glenn Pickering is my guest in studio. We are talking about relationships, and then we're going to move into getting back to the basics, some of the great fundamentals of a great relationship, because we want to talk about happy things today, don't we, Glenn?
At least some of the time, right?
Some of the time, yeah. I don't bring you in to talk happy. But if you do have a question about it, call us 877 or text us 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. We're going to talk about how important it is to be a listener. We're going to continue with that in 90 seconds. We're talking about listening today, so I want you to be in the active listening mode. I just made that up. I don't even know if that's... Is there such a thing as active listening mode?
There is now.
Okay, cool.
It's right out there on the air, so you can claim it.
Yeah, and because I open up the phone lines and the text line and let anyone call with questions, we are going to talk about listening, Glenn. We're going to get that started, right?
Yep.
Should we start or should we jump in with a listener?
If you've got a question, let's go.
All right, this is a slightly long comment. 2 years ago, my spouse cheated on me. I blamed myself, forgave him, made positive changes for myself, thought things were good, found God again. And then in the last 3 months, things felt off again. I found he's been with her again. States he maybe is in love with her, and he doesn't know if he wants to stop seeing her. I'm mad. I'm angry. I'm sick. My good man has gone bad. He's physically sick now with cancer. I feel like a jerk if I leave, but he clearly doesn't love me anymore. I'm crushed. He's out of town for a while. And he's avoiding conversation. He wants his cake and eat it too.
My first thought is, I'm so sorry that's happening to you. That there might be an experience in life that's more unpleasant than that, but I really don't know what that would be.
I mean,
there's a pain that goes with that that's hard to even put into words. So just know this. I feel sad. Second, I keep thinking this. When I first moved back from Minneapolis, like many, many years ago, I started working for a little company called Birchwood Centers, which is a great little place to work back then. There's some great Christian counselors there who are great role models for me, et cetera, et cetera. Eventually, those people sort of left over time, started their own practice, a lot of them. The practice was bought by somebody who was nowhere near as good at it and handled many things poorly, I thought. So this whole spirit of that agency was really, really just different. And I said to my wife, Gwen, honey, I think I might have to leave Birchwood. And she said to me, probably the strictest thing she ever said to me, she said, Glenn, Birchwood already left. And that one got my attention. I was asking myself, should I leave or not? But she was pointing out to me, Glenn, that question, should I leave this place I love? And she was pointing out to me, Glenn, that question has already been answered. The place you love already left. So you shouldn't be asking, should I leave this place I love since that already happened? You should be asking yourself, given that they have left, what am I going to do? Like, where do I go from here? Part of that grief thing I was talking about kind of what comes next.
Mm-hmm.
And so to that listener who wrote in, I keyed on sort of three things. One, there's a part of you that thinks you'd be a jerk to leave, but I just want you to notice Birchwood already left.
That's a job, though. This is a covenant, right?
Well, yeah, but... It's the same thing. It's like if somebody I love said, Glenn, I don't love you anymore and I'm leaving. And they did leave. And they're literally gone and with somebody else. Then if I say, well, I don't know if I should leave the relationship, it's important to understand that just happened,
mm-hmm.
which is sad and wrong. I mean, it violates every moral code I have. So I need you to understand that, but it's also just true. They left. And so instead of thinking to yourself, geez, I feel bad for leaving him, you need to understand if he's leaving, if he already is gone, basically, really, then should I leave is not really the question. How am I going to cope with the fact that he seems to have left is a way better question, a way more important question. And I also was struck by the fact that you said at the beginning, you know, I blamed myself. And I think, see, that's really deadly. Because here's what I know, and Bill has heard me talk about this at least 50 times. Every relationship is 50-50. So he had an affair at the front end, and you blamed yourself. But see, actually, both of you were part of how that relationship got to that point. And I get that you learned some things, but I can't tell that he did. Which is what happens if I just blame myself, because then the other person doesn't have to take their share of the responsibility or be transformed in the way they need to be transformed, which means they're very likely to repeat that behavior. So my thinking is, unless he comes back to you and says, I want to be back with you, and I want to learn whatever lessons there are so I don't keep making this mistake, then I think, great, welcome him back with open arms. But until then, you need to understand, if nothing changes, then nothing changes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's get to the listening part,
okay.
How important it is to not end up in heartbreak because we're much better listeners.
Thank you. Mostly when people come to me, you know, and I do counseling mostly, well, with individuals sometimes, but often with couples. Oftentimes they're going to come to me because the relationship is in a lot of chaos. They feel like there's a lot of arguing, or there's going to be this point where there's sort of a whole lot of caught in silence and avoiding each other because it goes so badly if they do talk. Or one or both of them kind of walks around in eggshells and doesn't know if they should see anything, something that sort of feels like that. And it feels overwhelming and it feels complex, and I totally get that. So it's important to understand that the answer to that situation, even if the situation is complex, that the answer is not. And Bill, you were saying a second ago that I'm good at sort of, you know, boiling things down to the basics.
Yes,
and
you are.
Partly it's because that's just how my brain works, of course. But partly, after all the years and years I've done counseling, I've just really come to understand a really, really great relationship is not great because people do amazing, great things. They're great because they do the basic things well. And if we can understand what those basic things are, we can start doing those things well ourselves and kind of create the relationship we want. So I want to teach people three things they can do today, really basic, really simple things that will literally start to transform all the things that they see in their relationship. Is that all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. So about listening, three things you can do to be a better listener. One of the things we do when we're listening poorly, like during an argument, for example, is we're always busy rehearsing our answer when the other person is talking instead of actually listening. We're not really listening or absorbing what they're saying. We're just getting our answer ready. I call it rehearsal. And, you know, raise your hand if you've ever done that, right? And here's what I always say. When I see two people arguing, I know the exact number of people who are listening, which, of course, is, you know, zero. But, see, the trick is I also know the exact number of people who have a good point, which is two. Both people know that they have a point they're trying to make. They can tell they're not being heard, so they try to make their point over again. And so we just keep going around that circle.
With greater volume in their voice.
Yes, with more and more intensity as time goes on, because it gets more and more frustrating to know that I have a good point and the other person's not hearing it. So it's important to think, okay, when we're doing that, when we're supposed to be listening, we're actually rehearsing instead. And it's important to quit doing that. Now, but here's the trick. Our mind, our little brain, is always busy doing something. So if I say to a client, okay, quit rehearsing when you're supposed to be listening, they're going to look at me like, okay. And they're going to think, okay, I just won't be rehearsing. Well, see, my mind has to do something. Unless I'm really, really deep in a prayerful state, my mind is actively busy running around like crazy. And I'm probably not in that deep prayerful state when I'm having a conflict or an argument with somebody in my life. So I'm probably not at that place where my mind is totally quiet. My mind is moving. So it's not enough to say to people, don't rehearse. So all of you who are listening, I want you to hear that loud and clear. If you know for a fact you tend to rehearse when you're supposed to be listening, I'm not just saying don't do that. It is literally impossible not to do something. So it's important to think, here's what I want you to do instead. You need to make sure when the other person is listening that the thing you're practicing is the summary that you're going to share with them when they get done talking. Your brain has a very, very clear thing to focus on. When that other one's done talking, I need to come up with one or two sentences that shows I got what they said. I understood it. So this will give you something. So instead of focusing on rehearsing and just preparing what you're going to say, you can still be focused. Your mind still has something to do, but it's something that's constructive instead, where it's just your job to think, okay, I want to be able to summarize this in one or two sentences when they get done. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, most of the time we're just carrying on parallel monologues.
Honestly, gosh, it's kind of true. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm gearing up for what I'm going to say next.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Which means I'm not actually listening. Which means even if I wanted to say something that sounded to the other person like I heard them, I wouldn't be able to, because let's be honest, I didn't actually hear them.
Right. Okay.
So we have the knee-jerk tendency to go to that place where we practice, where we're practicing our answer instead of saying, you know, really, really listening to them. Now.
So, Glenn, are you saying that when you get done making your point in maybe a sentence, I can say, so what I'm hearing you say is... And that's a welcomed response, and that won't be annoying. It's like,
well, it would be annoying, I suppose, if I did it mechanically.
Right.
I believe what you just said was. Now, notice I can also do it with an attitude which is not helpful. Oh, so you just think that.
Right.
See, when I talk about summarizing, that's not what that sounds
right.
like. I want you to think, okay, if I was going to summarize that as accurately as I could in one or two sentences, so that the other person could honestly say, yeah, that's what I meant.
Mm-hmm.
What would those one or two sentences be?
Gotcha. Well, that's very helpful.
Cool.
So I'm glad. Okay, what would be number two?
Well, let me just finish with that just for a second, if that's okay. Now, I can always tell if people are rehearsing, and I want you guys to sort of use this as a little tool for yourself. So say I can give you all these things. You can learn to practice all these simple things yourself. You can tell how your relationship is going and how anybody else's relationship is going by how fast the conversation goes. But he said, she said, he said, she said, they have a bad relationship. Because, see, if I'm actually doing that thing where I'm really listening, then when you and you get down, I summarize what you said. See, I don't have anything to say back yet because I haven't thought about that. So you need, I wanted you to have this clear picture in your head so you can kind of be monitoring your own self. If two people are having a great conversation, person A will say something, there will be a pause. Person B will summarize that as best they can, and then there will be another pause where B thinks to themselves, okay, what do I think about that? Yeah. So as we go to break, I just want you guys to be thinking about this, just as a simple little tool. Your job is to think, we need to have slower conversations. And my job, if I'm going to break that from my end, is I want to start summarizing what the other person said instead of rehearsing. That by itself, I promise you, will shift those conversations you've always had that tend to go so badly so quickly.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Glenn Pickering is in my studio. If you have a question you would like to ask Glenn, 877-933-2484. Again, that number is 877-933-2484. You're invited to come on the show and speak to us, or you're invited to send us a text message, and I will ask the question on your behalf. Glenn Pickering is my guest. His website is glennpickering.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. It's 31 minutes after the hour. Dr. Glenn Pickering is in studio. Let's see. Glenn, I got another question here from an anonymous caller, a listener. I'm experiencing grief over the loss of relationship with a sister who I used to work with.
Okay.
She has cut ties, and I don't know why. I don't know how to get over it. She said that I wasn't understanding, and they were telling me that I asked too many questions. How do I deal with the feeling of now being left out and not having that relationship?
We talked about it a little bit at the beginning of the show, that feeling rejected, feeling left out, feeling abandoned, those are painful places to be. So I'm very sorry that that's been happening to you. I think our busy little brain goes to those kind of places, like, why did this happen? Why do they do this to me? What does it all mean? Yada, yada. And I totally get that. But I think if we're going to go through the grief process well and just really come to terms with, wow, that relationship, at least as it was, is over. Now, we might eventually get transformed to find a different kind of relationship, so I'm not saying that's not possible. I'm just saying, but that relationship as it was is over. And all of the sort of rumination that we do is a way, honestly, although it sounds crazy, to not be sad. I used to help lead or teach sort of the leaders who led the groups in the Southwest suburbs called the Southwest Grief Coalition. And I was teaching the leaders one day about how to kind of watch for that, that when people ruminate, that means they're not letting themselves be sad. And, of course, all the leaders that I was teaching this to were people who had gone through grief themselves. That's why they're leaders. And there's this one woman who said, "Glenn, I'm sure that's not true." I said, "Okay, go ahead." She said, "My husband died, and I'm constantly worried about not having enough money to pay the bills, not going to have enough money. What am I going to do? I'm always ruminating about that. That's not a way to avoid sadness. I'm just really, really worried about that." And I don't know how this came to me. I swear God must have put these words in my heart because I asked her this question. I said, "Who used to pay the bills?" Of course, it was her. So every time she sat down to pay the bills, it was just a reminder that her husband wasn't there anymore. And so all that rumination was just a way to not say, "Wow, this is sad." And to just let herself be with that sadness. So when I saw her that next month, she said, "Glenn, you're a genius," which, you know, I knew that already. But she was just saying, "No, Glenn, when I just let myself be sad, all the rumination stopped." Hmm. And I feel way more ready to kind of figure out prayerfully what might come next for me. So I want to say to that person who called in about the grief she has about her sister, I get it's easy to just kind of go round and round about why did this happen, why did she say this, but it's really just important to just stay with, this is really sad. That relationship apparently, as it was at least, is really over. That's really sad. And I just need to just let myself be with, that's really sad. Mm. That hurts. It's the only way to actually move past that.
Mm. Yeah. Let's take a call. Barbara's calling in from Vadnais Heights. Barbara, welcome to the show. You have a question for Glenn.
Hi, thank you
so much for taking
my call.
Yeah.
I have an aunt that's quite old now. She's over 90 and still does quite well, but she broke up with me a couple years ago over kind of a small thing, and she's had tumultuous relationships with people throughout her life, and I thought I somehow was going to be different.
We all find out in the end that we're not.
Yeah, I'm so special.
Yes.
So, now I feel like, you know, am I ruminating? I want to kind of write her a love letter and just tell her how much she meant to me in my life, or should I just really let it go? I mean, I haven't talked to her in a couple of years.
She's
going to die.
That might be a helpful way to let her go, by which I mean this. Let's say I'm you, and I'm not writing my aunt a letter that says, "Oh, please take me back. I'm so worried," and all that other stuff. But I just write her a letter that says, "I really miss you. I'm really sad that I don't see you. Just wanted you to know."
Yes. Thank you.
Well, Barb, that would be healing for you. It would let you grieve in a way that had truth to it. And it would at least give her a chance to reach out back to you if she's also missing you. So it creates that possibility. But more than anything, it just lets you just be expressing your grief in the purest possible way, which is really, truly the fastest way to move on.
That sounds like a great idea.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And if I was writing to my 90-year-old aunt, I would have to use a big font.
Really big print.
Just a nice big font. But a handwritten letter from you, Barbara, I'm sure will be music
sweet
to her soul. Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're
and
so
welcome.
Even if it's not, just be really clear. Even if you never hear back from her, it will still have been a right and a powerful and a good thing to do for you.
Thank you. I'm going to do it.
Good
thanks,
for you,
Barbara. All right, we've got another caller on the line from Independence, Minnesota, Wanda. Wanda, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
You're
so
welcome.
Much for having me.
Of course.
I was trying to frame the question. This has been going on for about 4 years. A brother and his wife have shunned my parents. It's been very, very painful. My husband and I have met with them like 4 years ago and tried to discuss it with them. There was a lot of anger. They, in turn, shunned us. So for disagreeing with them and saying, you know, they told us we were disrespectful, basically for disagreeing with them. I've done a lot of studying and a lot of reading about personality behaviors, that kind of thing, and I actually, this may come across as a judgment, but I truly believe my brother is a covert narcissist. Very difficult personality. And I rehearse over and over in my head what he would say to me if I try to go back to him. Mm-hmm. But like what you were saying before, it's kind of like he's already left.
Right.
I tried what I could do. I even apologized when he said, you're being disrespectful. But
okay.
There was no apology offered back. And
right.
I'm struggling with the injustice of it.
Yes. There are actually, let me take that apart because what you said is so powerful and so deep. I don't want to miss any part of it. So one, there's a powerful injustice, which kind of drives you crazy, and that's the part that you kind of go over and over in your head about, I totally get. Two, there's just a sadness of losing your brother, like, what the heck? Because now your family was never going to be quite the same again, like it's never going to quite feel whole, and that's a really sad thought. And there's a part of you also that thinks almost clinically, yeah, I think my brother's got some really serious troubles, and all three of those are going on at one time. Now, he probably does have troubles, but the part of you that keeps going around and around, I think that for you somehow there's a part of that that's unfinished. And my question for you is, what part is still unfinished for you?
Again, I go back to the injustice of it.
Okay.
Because he triangulated my sister-in-law through the situation. She's a very concerned, helpful, you know, big relationship person,
mm-hmm.
but very submissive to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he truly triangulated her through it. He even talked
sure.
to her.
Right.
She was the one that sent me the email saying we were disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the way I'm not about appearances, but it does appear to other people that, yeah, I think it's not right. We're actually in the same friend group.
Oh, golly.
So hard because
yes.
we're tiptoeing around each other. We say hi, we even hug now and then, but there's
okay.
no depth,
okay.
there's nothing.
Okay.
You know? And I know my parents are probably going to die
right.
with this. And
right.
I guess to answer your question, when they die and we're at the funeral and this is all going on, it's going to be horrible.
Right. Yeah, they might not even come.
I think they'll come
okay.
because they're very social and they're very
oh, sure. okay.
you know,
okay.
wanting to look like they're doing the right thing. And
right.
they have good hearts. I believe that they do. But this is just so wrong and it's
right.
just eating away at me.
Okay, so here's my request for you. And remember, I really mean this specifically for you. I get they're triggered by the injustice and by the unfairness of it. And I think because you also can see that your brother's got some serious struggles, like really serious, that I ask you instead to have compassion for him. Not because I'm worried about him or trying to fix him or take care of him, because I would like you to be released from that part of you that feels unfair or incomplete. And I'm thinking if you're willing to have compassion, think, hey, my brother really has struggles. It comes out in some of the weirdest sort of ways. And I'm just going to pray that God finds some way to help heal him. I just know it probably can't be through me.
Mm-hmm.
We'll help you to release that so that you don't have to keep carrying around that stuff, because otherwise you can't keep carrying his stuff around, which the only thing worse than carrying my own stuff around is carrying somebody else's stuff around. That's really exhausting.
Absolutely it is. So.
So tiring.
All right.
Thank you.
I appreciate you so
Thank
much.
You, Wanda.
I bet. You take care.
Yeah, nice to have you on the show. All right, Glenn, let's get back into listening.
All right, Don.
You know, what happens when couples say we just have no longer have anything in common?
Well, see, here's the thing. If we communicate badly, so it becomes less and less pleasurable or enjoyable or anticipatory to be together, we start looking for ways to not be together. We literally almost actively develop different sets of interests because it's easier to not be around. And so So when people say, well, Glenn, we just don't have anything in common, I want to gently ask the question, back when you did spend time together, before it got so weird, what did you do together and what were you doing differently then than you're doing now? Because back then where you weren't avoiding each other. Mm-hmm. You were treating each other differently than you do now. There are things you're doing now that make each other feel like it's not really safe to be with you or fun to be with you, and so I kind of look for other things to do. And it's really important for both people in that couple to think, okay, what is it that we're each doing that makes the other one feel like not safe to be with me or not cared about when they're with me or not included when they're with me? And really ask ourselves those pretty deep questions, because the truth is we would spend time together with each other if it was fun or interesting or good or fulfilling in some way. So if we're not, that says to me, okay, somehow this relationship stopped being gratifying to each of you. And you need to ask each of you, 50-50, what are each of us doing that keeps the other one from actually wanting to be with us?
What if someone has become more of a control freak over time and they didn't start that way? Things seem kind of nice, and all of a sudden someone wants to be in control all the time.
It never happens.
Pardon?
I'm just kidding. It doesn't really happen like that.
Yes, it does.
What does happen is people get more and more of a certain way over time. You've heard me talk lots of times about how in any given marriage, we're always either growing closer and closer together or drifting further and further apart. Mm-hmm. One of those two things are always happening. And so if we're drifting further and further apart, then each of our weaknesses get more and more obvious. So let's say I'm real controlling and my partner's real passive right from the beginning. And we start drifting apart, and I start panicking because I try to get more and more controlling to try and keep it together. My partner, who is already sick of how controlling I am, starts getting more and more passive, withdrawing, finding more and more of their own things to do, which makes me feel more panicked, which makes me more controlling, which makes them farther and start getting more passive. And so what happens is not that somebody suddenly becomes controlling, it's that they always were sort of controlling, the other one always was sort of passive, and as they've drifted apart, what happens is that gets more and more extreme.
Mm-hmm. What if someone is finding themselves being criticized a little bit more than usual? Ouch.
Either the person is being critical, maybe they're just going through a hard time and they're mm-hmm. just need a little prayer and a little grace until they kind of come out the other side of that one. But if I feel like, well, actually that's kind of a pattern, it's not that they've just been more critical or negative the last week or two. It's like somehow in our relationship they just get more and more negative over time, and how it is this year compared to how it was last year feels really bad to me. I'm going to say the same thing. That's a sign of drifting further and further apart. So if I feel connected to somebody, I look for what's good about them. If I start to feel like abandoned by them, I start to feel more critical when I'm with them because I feel like you don't really like me, which makes them not want to be with me because they act like that. And again, we just start drifting further and further apart. So mm-hmm. if it's a very short-term thing, I think pray for them, give them grace, wait for it to be better.
Mm.
But if you feel like, no, this is a pattern, then you have to say, okay, we are literally letting our marriage drift further and further apart. And this is a symptom of that. And so we could try and address the symptom, but it's more important to say, okay, why are we letting that relationship drift apart the way we are? And what would we have to do to get it moving back in the right direction?
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we've got more with Dr. Glenn Pickering. If you have a question or you would like to have us address an issue or concern, 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. We'll be right back. Dr. Glenn Pickering is in my studio. We've got a couple of calls coming in, but we're not quite ready for them yet. Glenn, talking about how important it is to be a good listener. I don't think any of us are really, really, really good at that. And as I was listening to you, when you listen to someone and they're mm-hmm. sharing something with you and you want to actually do what you have suggested, which is mm-hmm. stop and listen and take it in, what happens when you're punished for not answering fast enough?
Well, that happens to me all the time.
You're stalling. You're stalling.
Right, right. Then
why are you stalling?
It's important to say, you know me, hon, it takes me a couple minutes to really think about things.
Yeah.
Just gently like that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be mean about it. I don't want to lash back. I do want them to know. Because, see, extroverts process information out loud and introverts tend to process information internally. So if you ask me a question because I'm so introverted, you're going to see me think about it for a few seconds before I answer. And you might think I'm blowing you off, I'm not paying attention, or I don't care about your question. So it's going to be helpful for me to remind you, hey, this is me taking your question really seriously. When I stop and really think hard about it, that means I really am thinking about what you said. Because an extrovert might see that as being blowing them off, not listening, don't care, because they would just start talking right away because that's their way of in processing information.
But if your previous style is a ping pong match, back and forth, and you want to take this new idea that your listeners are learning about today and implement it, you could get some crossfire from that.
I might get crossfire. So the best thing to do, honestly, always, I think, is if I'm going to try and do something differently in our relationship, I'm going to tell my partner that I am trying that. So that when they see me do it, they're like, what the
heck
are you doing that? They're like, oh, this is Glenn trying to do what he said.
Yeah.
And if they say, why are you taking so long? I'm going to say, remember, I'm trying to listen better now. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I think it's not fair to have the other person be a guinea pig in my experiment where they're in the experiment, but they don't know. I want them to know they're in the experiment.
Mm-hmm. A listener has written in, what about long-term grief and loss when a person hasn't died but is caught up in an addiction and doesn't want to change? It's complicated grief and loss. Could you talk about this term? How do you move on with your own life?
That's a really great question.
I agree.
And I think...
I have very smart listeners.
Yeah, you do, at least a couple of them. Okay, so what I'm thinking is this. In some ways, the process is the same. But this one particularly is harder than if somebody dies for two reasons. Or if somebody, like, leaves you in a relationship. Like, you think things are going great in your marriage and your partner tells you they want a divorce. Or if you have a person in your life who is in an addiction and not going to change. It's like a death. It's the same sort of grief. It's the same sort of loss. It's the same sort of acknowledging that relationship's never going to be as it was. But with this added little burden, and the other person chose that. If somebody close to me dies, I'm going to really miss them, of course. But I'm not going to feel like, well, you left me. It's like, well, you died. I mean, it wasn't personal to me. But if somebody would choose an addiction over me, or somebody chooses a relationship, ends our relationship because they want to be with somebody else, or just doesn't want to be with me, well, then there's that loss there, and it's personal.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it literally was done to you, which is, that's why it adds that extra level of sort of painfulness. So the process is going to be a lot the same. You need to come to terms with the sadness. This is over. It's really done. And with that level of sadness, like, and they chose that. Which is its own level of grief, you know what
it
I mean?
Is.
So it's like there's almost like two layers
hurtful.
To that one. Two layers where it's like, wow, that relationship is really over, and they chose that. That's like, that's a sadness in and of itself. And so I have to come to terms with, wow, that's really over. And I have to come to terms with, and they chose that. Oh.
Well, obviously addiction is so complicated that they would say, I did not choose addiction. It chose me.
It's possible, right?
You know, I've got a disease and it's out of my control. And but there's still tremendous sadness with all of that.
Exactly. And even if that person who's addicted to whatever feels like, Glenn, this is not really in my control, I get that. But I also still understand, yes, but you're choosing to continue in that lifestyle as opposed to looking into what your alternatives are.
Mm-hmm.
There are rehab centers around. There are AA groups to go to there, you know, I mean, whatever. It's like you are actively, you might not have chosen to be addicted. It might have kind of gotten a hold of you, but you are choosing not to change that. And that part, it's sad. It's hurtful.
Yeah, it is. So have we put a bow on this listening subject? Have we covered the points that we wanted to cover, or do we have one left?
We have 17 left, but you'll just have to have me back. But
we'll have you back.
I love making Rebecca laugh. All right, so just this last quick thought. If we're not rehearsing, a second thing we're likely to do when we're supposed to be listening but we're not is we're defending ourselves. So instead of summarizing what the other person said, not only do we make our own point instead, we make our defensive point. And so I just want to say to people, and we'll talk about this more next time I come back, if you hear yourself get defensive, like you have to defend or explain or rationalize something, I'd just like you to hear that tone in your voice where you get a little whiny or a little defendy or a little like somebody has to agree with you. I want you to hear that tone in your voice and remember this. God says you are precious. You don't have to earn that. And you don't have to prove that. And see, when I get all defensive or start backpedaling or get all justifying, see, I'm trying to earn my justification, but God has already said that that's already mine. So I'm trying to prove that I'm okay, except I already am. So I always think, no matter how serious our faith is, at some point we're going to find out if we really mean it or not. I read all the Bible stuff. I go to church. And I say all these things. Do I actually really, right down to the ground, believe what I say I believe? And the instant we can feel ourselves getting defensive, we need to realize we're being asked that question. Do you actually believe you're already justified, or do you think you still need to keep earning it? And so I want to drop all the defending and explaining, not because I'm trying to lose the argument, because that doesn't even matter, but because I realize that part of me that's acting like I need to earn my justification is literally degrading to me. So I want to stop doing it. Not because I'm giving up on the conversation, because I no longer want to be in the conversation in that way, where I'm acting like I have to earn being okay, because I need to understand, God says, Glenn, you are exactly as I made you to be. Mm-hmm. You're precious in my sight. You don't need to earn that.
How, when we are in discussions, in conflict, and we are trying to be heard,
right.
We want to express something.
Yep.
We don't want the person to be defensive, but they can't help it because it's a style. And we want to turn a corner.
Right.
Is there the first baby step listeners could take tonight?
That is a really, really great question. Thank you for asking it. Jesus said, why do you see the speck in your brother's eye? You don't see the log in your own eye.
Mm-hmm.
If there's something I need to talk to somebody about in my life, I just tell them what they're doing that's bugging me. That will always make them very likely to be defensive. Or I could say, hon, there's a thing we do that doesn't work. We always handle things this way, or our conversation always go badly in this way. I would like us to find a better way to do that. Here's the part I think I need to do differently. So I have to be willing to start with myself. So that gives them then a gracious place to step in and say, you're probably right. There's part of that I could do differently too. Great. But see, I can't expect them to step into that place in the relationship if I'm not there myself.
Mm.
Otherwise, I'm asking them to do something I'm unwilling to do my own self.
So you're looking for some nice, neutral, common ground on which both of you
right.
can step.
Yes.
Sometimes the arenas are so dangerous, nobody wants to step into that
exactly,
arena because
right.
you get your head taken off.
Right. And if I come in sounding like you're the problem and you need to get your stuff together, I will get my head bit off. Because
mm-hmm.
on some level, the other person knows that can't be true. That's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm like, no, I get it. We're in this together. We both have a part of how that gets off track. I would love for us to both to figure that out together and support each other in doing that differently. See, I at least have a pretty good shot at being heard in that conversation
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the way people usually come at
yeah.
it.
This is not fair, Glenn, because we have so little time left. What happens when somebody deep down is playing a little bit of the victim card?
And they very well might.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, so you're saying it's all my fault. I'm going to say, no, I want to be really clear. I totally get that's half mine and half yours.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want us to figure that out together.
And that's controversial and provocative.
Uh-huh.
And I know
yep.
you get into trouble with some people when you say that because
right.
there are listeners that are saying, no, it's 99% his fault.
Right. And to any of you who are thinking that, I just want you to just take Jesus' advice really seriously and just ask yourself that question. If I was going to, in front of God, just really have to acknowledge what was my part of keeping that interaction going, what would that be? And if I'm prayerful and if I'm open, God will help me to see that very clearly.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Glenn Pickering has been my in-studio guest today, and if you would like to go to his website, I'll tell you what it is. It's Glenn with two N's, so GlennPickering.com. He offers a pretty nice little offer where about midway down the page, there will be a place you can click to get a free 20-minute consultation with him, and you can learn a lot in 20 minutes with Glenn. So believe me, it's worth checking out. That wraps up hour one. Awfully looking forward to hour two. Kylie Crossland is going to be with me and then Nancy Alcorn as well. So that's all ahead in hour two. We will take a very short break and be back in about 4 minutes. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.